This BBC podcast is supported by ads outside the UK.
I'm Natalia Melman Petrozella, and from the BBC, this is Extreme, Peak Danger.
The most beautiful mountain in the world.
If you die on the mountain, you stay on the mountain.
This is the story of what happened when 11 climbers died on one of the world's deadliest mountains, K2. And of the risks we'll take to feel truly alive.
If I tell all the details, you won't believe it anymore.
Extreme, Peak Danger. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
We were together.
At that time, I was dreaming too much. Every time I closed my eyes, I would dream. Or if there was a loud sound, I would be scared. I thought it was ISIS. I dreamed of those events constantly.
Amira is from the district of Sinjar in northern Iraq, and she's one of thousands of Yazidis who were persecuted by the Islamic State from 2014 onwards because of their religious identity. This led to a genocide with devastating consequences.
This is BBC News. I'm Sean Lay. The headlines at 11 o'clock. The UN says tens of thousands of people in northern Iraq need life-saving help. Many are still stranded on a range of mountains under siege from Islamic militants.
What the Yazidi women and girls suffered during the genocide was truly something of nightmares.
Islamic State fighters discuss prices for thousands of captured women sold as sex slaves.
Their villages in Sinjar were attacked. The men and boys were taken to become soldiers, if not killed on the spot, in front of their families. And if they didn't escape, the women and girls were taken, they were raped and enslaved, and sold on like animals between the fighters. The people who were able to flee before being caught, or later escaped, or who were rescued, all ended up in internally displaced persons camps in the Kurdistan region of Iraq. These makeshift homes were supposed to be temporary, but that was in 2014, and so large numbers of survivors have now been in these same camps for more than 10 years. 6 years ago, myself and several others providing support to these camps were looking for a way to help the women and girls heal from their immense trauma. That's when we took a leap into the unknown by introducing something unexpected into the camps. The sport of boxing. From the BBC World Service, I'm Taban Suresh, and this is the documentary, Boxing Sisters, Yazidi women boxing their way back to health.
Look at that.
When I make my hand like this, I imagine that someone is in front of me. I concentrate, use my power, and with every punch I become stronger. Before boxing, I was so sad. I was mentally broken. Gradually, I got hooked on the boxing bag, and I realized I felt better.
For this community, recovering through the combat sport of boxing was far from straightforward. It falls outside of the norms of their traditions and what's expected of Yazidi women. But I've seen firsthand how it transforms lives. The women are now known as the Boxing Sisters, and this is their story. So today, the Boxing Sisters are outside in the courtyard area in Rwanga camp, where we've got various cabins. They're practicing outside because it's lovely weather. And we have roughly around 20 women and girls that are participating in today's class. Some of them are old students that have returned and they love continuing in the cohort, but most of them are new. So today is actually their first lesson. So you'll have different degrees of experience. We have a punching bag. They've got boxing gloves and pads. So they're all paired up with each other.
They're currently doing some stretches, so warming up and doing some stretches before. They're doing press-ups at the moment. And there's lots of giggles and smiles happening because not everyone can do them, and so this is fun to watch. Seeing them now when they're laughing and smiling and just being like, just living life is phenomenal to watch because I know what they've been through.
I felt my whole body functioning and my heart beating rapidly. I imagined my enemies. Lots of things have happened in my life, difficult things. People assaulted me. I always carry that with me. After I have come to boxing and punched, I feel better. My name is Amira. I'm 27 years old. It's been 9 years. This year will be 10 that we've been in the camp. I live here with my three children and my husband and also his family. At the beginning, when we arrived at the camp, I had mental health problems, and my psychological condition was really bad. I couldn't sleep at all at night. I was still thinking about everything. Whenever I closed my eyes, I felt like I was still there. It was around 3 a.m. when the battle began in Sinjar. The sound of war came from the other side of the village. At 7 a.m., ISIS took over the village. They put me and my two sisters on one side, and they took my father and brother to the other side. They kept us there and killed my father there in front of us. The person who murdered my brother, he used to play football with my brother. When he was about to kill him, I was shrinking and afraid to watch. The one who was in front of me told me to watch it directly. He didn't let me turn a blind eye. Whenever I speak about it, I cry. I haven't seen anything like that happen anywhere in the world. I wouldn't be able to do that to anyone, no matter what the person did to me. This is not such a thing one human does to another. The life there was really miserable. If we tried to escape, they would sell us. Most of the Yazidi girls and women cannot talk about the things that have happened to them. They cannot talk about it because what happened to them is considered weakness and dishonor. They say that a person from another religion has raped you. When we arrived at this camp, what I felt was unbearable. I took medicine for almost 2 months, but it was useless. I tried to kill myself. I nearly died. Then I tried again. I was in the ICU in the hospital for 7 days in the Hook. When I returned, Miss Nadifa, the boxing instructor, and Miss Taban were here. They both came and visited me. Miss Taban told me that I should go to boxing. I said I can't go there. I don't have the strength. They came to me again and told me, "We want you to come so you can relax." I liked boxing. It's a special and different feeling. You get stronger and you can defend yourself better. Now I'm better mentally. As I train with people, boxing has made me better.
What women like Amira and others in the camps have been through is very close to my heart. I'm a genocide survivor myself from Saddam Hussein's era. And even though I've been living in Britain for a long time, I knew that I had to go back in 2014 when IS began attacking minority ethnic communities like Yazidis.
A couple of old Soviet helicopters are waiting to haul tens of thousands trapped in the neighboring mountain. Taban is a British Kurd. She's only just arrived today.
We saw lots of displaced Yazidis. It was a horrific scene, and I can't imagine what's waiting there on the mountains for us to see.
And then in 2016, I set up my own charity to provide support for women and girls impacted by conflict and displacement. So I'd work very closely with the women and girls, and I knew the extent of the trauma that they'd experienced, and also the reality that there weren't enough mental health services in the region. That's when I started to look for alternative approaches that could help women and girls channel their emotions and their anger. Boxing was something that came up, but it was a real wild card, and I had no idea how it would be accepted by this conservative community. And then something serendipitous happened. It turned out that Nedifa, a camp president who had already been helping us with some exercise classes, had actually been boxing in private since she was young.
My name is Nadifa. I'm from Sinjar. I'm 37 years old. In Sinjar, my mother was sick. I was young. My father was with his other family and children. I looked after my siblings. One of my brothers was an infant and he needed milk. I wasn't even able to cook for them. Secretly, I was crying all the time. When I was in the third grade, I was coming back from school and there was a bag. My uncle had filled it with dry grass. He hung it on the big tree in their garden. When he was in secondary school, he would come home and practice boxing. Usually, I would drop my bag, and before taking off my school uniform, I would go and punch that bag too. It was really helpful and made me relax. I liked it a lot. Sometimes my mother would say to me, "You are a girl, what are you doing?" But I wouldn't listen. I would sneak out to my uncle just to practice with him. After I grew up, I realized this game is called boxing.
Once Nadifa and her family arrived in the camp in 2014, she'd been informally showing friends what she'd learned from her uncle.
I heard that many girls had been captured and kidnapped. Also, many had escaped from ISIS. They were very upset and tired. I thought if they engage in these practices, they may relax like me. Some of my friends came, and without having a boxing bag, we would practice. A friend of mine, who had lost all of her family, told me that when I'm doing boxing, I get relaxed a lot. I'm releasing the pain inside of me.
So we organised for British boxing champion Kathy Brown to come and train Nedifa to run classes. Now Nadifa trains everyone that comes through the program.
Nadifa loves. Nadifa does love kind of putting them through the test at times. She's very confident in the way that she delivers the classes. She's got a very soft, gentle nature about her, but then it is also quite stern when she's giving instructions. She's from the community, so everyone really knows Nadifa really, really well. And there's a level of trust that's kind of built with them.
Every day I come here. I work and give boxing sessions. Now I'm finished, I'll go home and rest with my family. Some kids are playing football here as there is no special place to play. Life inside the camp is difficult. There are families of 8 to 10 members living in a single cabin. The biggest cabin is 3 meters wide. The other cabins are 2 meters. We have some stores, but they're not good ones because we live in a camp and people are very poor. There are some cafes and billiard places for boys to spend their time, but there are no private places for girls and women in the camp. This is our house, and now we'll enter. These two are my little nieces. When I go, they don't see me because they are sleeping. When I come back, both run towards me. The little one is 2 years old, and the other one likes boxing a lot. She always asks me to take her. At home, I explain to her what boxing is. Wear them and we will do boxing. She's happy. Sansa, will you put it on your hand too? Punch it, come on, punch it. Harder.
Jab, cross, did they
In our society, not only in Yazidi society, but in Arabic countries, girls are not involved in boxing. In Kurdistan, Iraq, I think I'm one of the first girls who started boxing. Taban told me there is a British company. She said, if you like boxing, we will ask them to come and give you training. She said, we are in agreement. But camp girls, are they going to come? At first, I persuaded about 10 girls to join me. After 2 days, only 5 remained. Then, only 3 girls remained. I went to the girls' houses, asking them why they left. They said their dads wouldn't allow them. Some others had to leave because of their brothers. They said boxing is not for girls and women. I visited and told their families not to worry, as nothing will happen to the girls in the organization. Then day by day, more girls came. I don't know the exact number, but around 300 to 400 students have, until now, participated in our courses in this camp. I started to see more and more bravery in their movements. Psychologically, physically, mentally, they get a lot of benefits from the training. Women are not inherently weak. They are capable of strength as well.
The progress that the women were making was crystal clear for Nadifa, myself, and others to see. But at home, for women like Amira, there was often more work to be done in terms of persuading their families.
With my own family, my husband asked me, why are you going? What is the benefit? He said, I don't want you to go. So I made a video of myself, and when I went home, I showed it to him. He told me that he didn't realize that I know how to punch. He was thinking that I just sit there and watch them doing it. I asked him for his opinion on boxing. He said, "Do you like it?" I told him that whenever I go there, I get really relaxed. I bring out my rage there with boxing. He said that if I'm comfortable with it, it's a nice thing. And now, gradually, when I stay at home, he said, "Isn't it the time to go to boxing?"
You're listening to the documentary from the BBC World Service.
Hi, I'm Namulanta Kombo, here to tell you that my podcast, Dear Daughter, is back. And this time, I'm joined by an all-star lineup of guests, each with some sage life advice and a letter for their daughter.
Every mother has a letter in her head for their daughter. So it's really nice that that's being like expressed out loud.
That's Dear Daughter Stars from the BBC World Service. Listen now by searching for Dear Daughter wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
Dear Daughter.
Life here in the camps has always been uncertain for the boxing sisters and the people around them. But it has never been more uncertain than now. Following the announcement last year that all the IDP camps here in Iraq should be closed, and all camp residents sent back to their places of origin. It's now February 2025, and while some camps have already closed, others like Rawanga Qadia, where Amira and Adifa live, are simply stuck in limbo, without any further information. We don't know how quickly things will move from here, but there are currently around 150,000 Yazidis living in these camps, and most don't feel safe returning to places like the city of Sinjar, which is now controlled by many different military groups, and where the infrastructure has largely been destroyed. Although the conditions are certainly not ideal here in the camps, I know how much the safety of them and programs like the Boxing Sisters mean to everyone in the community, including Amira.
There is news saying that they will close the camps. It is really hard. Personally speaking, I don't have a house there at all. We did have one, but it was made of mud and now it has collapsed. There is no place for me to go, and I don't have the money to rebuild. Here we feel safe in Kurdistan, but if we go to Sinjar now, there is no camp.
So today the women and girls are doing a demonstration to the rest of the camp. It's taken a long time and a lot of perseverance from our team for them to accept the idea of boxing and allow their female family members to attend. But there are still some families, and particularly men from older generations, who have some reservations. And the original plan was to have an audience of both men and women. But eventually it was decided by the women that they weren't ready to do this. So we're going to be doing a show just for women who are from an older age group. And actually, I think this is really important because you've got to remember that the older generations, especially the women, they carry a lot of ingrained bias as well, and they support the men in the way that they think. So it's important for them to understand why it's important to allow girls to box and to be seen in these spaces. Because once they are advocates, they go home and put the pressure on the men to allow the girls to do it. So I think it's equally important to have the older generation of women supporting us. At the moment, there's a lot of excitement. Nadifa is gathering the girls and giving them a last warm-up.
The reason your hit is not strong enough is because you don't bend enough. When you get close to the sandbag, you should change your position like this. Everyone welcome. Today we have an activity because a lot of girls come to us for boxing. We don't provide economic support, but we do provide mental support. Boxing was a strange sport. Sometimes a man or woman at home will say, "What is boxing?" It's not a bad thing for girls to attend this session. Today is for safety, how to protect each other, how to protect ourselves. All right, our students, thank you for coming and for watching our performance. Lift your boxing gloves. Get away from each other a little bit. Go a little further, you three go further. Now, on the occasion of boxing, we'll cut the cake. We would like women and girls from all ages to participate in the sessions and the parents to give them permission for participating.
Now, what they're doing is inviting four of the eldest women in the camp, who are dressed in traditional Yazidi clothes, to cut the cake in celebration and acceptance and approval of the women and girls boxing.
Come here, you four hold the knife together.
It's just such a beautiful moment because I know how far they've come to actually get to this point of A, smiling, B, being able to box, C, you know, the older generation being part of that as well and accepting it.
Our thoughts were changed. Since we fled, we got irritable. We got psychological problems and many other problems. Yes, many thoughts were changed.
Before we fled from Sinjar, we didn't know this sport. But it's called boxing. It makes me so happy to see these girls doing boxing exercise. Believe me, it creates an amazing feeling inside of me.
You've been listening to the documentary from the BBC World Service.
Hi, I'm Namulanta Kombo, here to tell you that my podcast, Dear Daughter, is back. And this time, I'm joined by an all-star lineup of guests, each with some sage life advice and a letter for their daughter.
Every mother has a letter in her head for their daughter. So it's really nice that that's being like expressed out loud.
That's Dear Daughter Stars from the BBC World Service. Listen now by searching for Dear Daughter wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
Dear Daughter.